Heritage. Ours is the heritage of Western civilization, a civilization built by adventuring men through 30 generations of trial and glory, from the Middle Ages to the 20th century.
The American Broadcasting Company proudly presents Heritage, dramatic adventures from the chronicles of 10 centuries of Western civilization.
Materials for these documentary programs are prepared with the guidance of Life magazine, based upon life's picture history of Western man, and produced in collaboration with leading scholars and educators.
Today, Heritage dramatizes a story of murder, a story of women, and a fable about a rooster, with Charles Irving as narrator.
One that a filler with his surest sota, the drought of merch hath pursed to the rota, and bathered every vein in swish liqueur, of which virtue and chandon is the...
That is English, the way it was spoken 500 years ago. The words are from a book of exciting and wonderful stories, written in verse by Geoffrey Chaucer, one of the truly great figures of English literature. The stories you are about to hear are from Chaucer's The Canterbury Tales. These time-honored tales form a record of a pilgrimage from London to the shrine of Thomas à Becket at Canterbury, undertaken by a group of Christian souls in need of blessing, which accounts for the presence of an English lady of questionable repute, who, despite her five husbands, has laid plans for the sixth, and who relates to this goodly company the tale of the wife of Bath.
Laetam feminam si in veneris, verum sapientum in venius. Find a happy woman, and you'll find a wise man.
This tale begins in the days of King Arthur. A certain knight had a most unsavory escapade with a lady of high degree. Now he stands on trial for his life before the great King Arthur and his good Queen Guinevere. Being young and none too brave, he trembles as the stern old king pronounces these fatal words.
Take this young villain to the marketplace, set his head on the chopping block, and let the executioner put an end to a wicked, worthless life.
Oh, your majesty.
What is it, my queen? Surely this is the least he deserves for transgressing against the womanhood of our kingdom?
It's of the womanhood of our kingdom I'm thinking, my lord.
Indeed?
This lad here, who I no way defend, is nevertheless so good to look at that all women everywhere, in spite of the mischief he has made them, will mourn his passing. Thus they will be twice abused, first by his crime, and second by your removal of him.
This kind of female logic is too much for me at this hour in the morning. What is your will?
Sir Knight, I'll spare your life on the condition that you give me the answer to the question that I ask. That question being, what is it that a woman really wants?
But your majesty...
Be careful now, and save your neck from the axe.
I have had some experience with women, it is true. But as to what they really want, I haven't the faintest idea.
Then go find out. I give you a year and a day to travel and learn the answer. And if by then you know it not, your head shall fall, as the king has ordered.
The young knight set forth on his errand, resolved to do his best to save his neck, which, being the only one he had, he was quite eager, you may be sure, to retain. But luck managed to evade him at every turn.
You.
I am a wayfarer whose life is in great danger, good housewife.
Well, well, what will you have from me?
A moment of your time to answer a question.
I've got no time to spare. My husband is as poor as a church mouse, and I work my fingers to the bone from morning to night.
Madam.
I haven't got money to hire a servant. I haven't got money to hire a nursemaid. I haven't got money to buy a new dress.
Milady.
I haven't even got money to pack up and leave here. So if you want to ask a question, make it quick.
What is it that a woman really wants?
Money.
So I would be most grateful if I might ask you a question, my good wife.
But I'm not a wife.
No.
I'm a spinster. But what? Go ahead.
What is it that a woman really wants?
A man.
Now it happened that as he journeyed toward Camelot on an early spring morning, he saw in a shadowy forest 24 young girls dancing among the shafts of April sunlight. He spurred on his horse, but when he arrived at the place where they danced, they suddenly vanished into thin air, leaving the lad face to face with the oldest and ugliest woman he had ever beheld.
What happened to them? Those damsels I saw dancing.
This is a mystic wood, young sir. And what one sees here is neither true nor false.
What?
Don't bother your handsome head about it. You seem troubled enough without concerning yourself with such things as these.
Aye, it is true I am troubled. I am a dead man as I stand here, for I am on my way back to face my queen without the answer to the question, what is it that a woman really wants?
First, take my hand and swear that you will do the next thing I ask of you, if it is in your power, and you shall have an answer for the queen.
My queen, what a woman really wants is to be master of her man, to rule his home and guide his will and fortunes. This is a woman's chief desire, though you, milady, as a woman, may kill me for saying so. Do what you will with me. I am at your disposal.
Well, my queen, what say you?
Who can dispute the truth of what is spoken? The lad goes free.
One moment. I've come to collect my due. He promised to grant my first wish if I gave him the answer for the queen.
Oh, no.
Here and now I ask that you, Sir Knight, take me as your bride.
My bride?
The wife of your bosom.
For the love of heaven, ask for something else.
You gave this creature your word, as she said?
Yes, your majesty.
Then I command you, keep it, as befits your knightly oath, or be banished forever from this realm.
And indeed, there was no way out of it. The hag held the lad to his bargain, and they were married with little festivity on the following morning. But he was a woe-begone boy. On his wedding night, he turned his back to her.
Better to be dead than married to a thing like you.
Thing like me?
So old and ugly.
Does my age and ugliness displease you so?
Could they do anything but displease me?
Yes, truly. They might be comforting to an older and wiser man who knows that no one flirts with a wife that is old and ugly. However, you are too romantic to appreciate these virtues, I take it.
You take it right. Better, as I said, to have died on the block than to go on living in this misery.
This misery can be changed into another kind of misery. You may have me as I am, old and ugly, but faithful forever. Or I'll be for you young and lovely. But you must take the chances then that every man takes who has a young and lovely wife. And knows that every man's eye is upon her, and every man's heart covets her smile and kiss. It is yours to choose.
What kind of a choice is this?
Your choice. Come, make it.
How can I? On both hands are good and evil. Whichever I take, I win and lose.
Still, you must decide.
I will not. Instead, I leave the matter in your hands.
My hands?
Yes. You choose which you think will be best for the both of us. Whatever you decide will be all right with me.
You realize what you're doing.
What I am doing?
You're making me your master, the ruler of your house, and guide of your will and fortune.
I think it will be best that way.
Then we're no longer at odds, my love. And I shall be both things to you, both lovely and faithful. As lovely as any queen, and faithful until I die. Turn to me, my knight, and kiss me.
And he turned, and he saw that her face was beautiful, and he saw in her eyes that she'd never failed him. For the knight had given his lady fair what a woman really wants. Thus ended the tale of the wife of Bath. And from this story of Chaucer's, we gather, along with its moral, that the desire of women to rule the roost has changed very little through the ages. This was something of a romantic satire, a satire of the kind that was very popular in Chaucer's time. The great 14th century writer, however, wasn't limited to any one literary form. In fact, part of our heritage from Geoffrey Chaucer was the murder story, as evidenced by the narrative of another of the Canterbury Pilgrims called The Pardoner's Tale.
Radix malorum est cupiditas. Greed is the root of all evil.
In Flanders once, there was a company of men who were given to folly, riot, gambling, and taverns. To the music of harps and lutes, they played both day and night. Of this whole company, three were the worst. The first one was known as the Bruiser. The second as Rudolph, who could not speak. The third as the Young One. And these three decided one morning that they would find death and slay him. They asked an old man, "Where is death?"
"Gentlemen, if you are so eager to find death, turn up this crooked way, for in that grove I left him, under the tree. There death will await you. See you that oak on the horizon line? And now, good day, gentlemen, for I must be off. God be with you, and may you be with him soon."
"Here it is. Here is the oak in the center of the grove. Here's where we shall find death and slay him."
"I don't see anything."
"He may be on the other side of the tree. We'll approach cautiously. Slowly now. Slowly. All right, surprise him.
There's no one here. Look.
Caskets filled with gold pieces. Be careful. Be careful. Someone may be watching."
"Rudolph, get behind that tree and watch.
Quick. Fellas, take heed of what I say. In spite of seeming always to play, my wits are keen. Now, if this gold could but be carried home to my house or else to yours, for I think we all agree the money belongs to all of us, then we could divide it easily. But certainly we cannot do it in broad daylight."
"Why not?"
"Because men would say we were robbers."
"They know us too well.
And ere long we'd hang for the treasure."
"We can take it a bit at a time."
"No, I have a better plan. This treasure must be carried home by night, cautiously and slyly. So I propose that the Young One shall go to town and purchase wine and cheese, while the remaining two of us shall guard the treasure. And when it is night, we'll take the treasure to a spot we all agree upon."
"The plan appears good to me."
"Then hurry along as fast as you can." That he goes, Rudolph. A nice sort of a lad, no, eh? Rudolph, you know that you are my own sworn brother, even though you cannot speak, and brothers should bring profit to each other. Rudolph, if this gold could be split into but two parts, ha, 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 you smile. You like it better that way. All right. Now, look, when he returns, watch when he sits. Then rise as if you were going to play with him. And while you struggle with him as in game, I shall thrust him through the side. And we shall divide the gold into but two parts. Is it agreed? I wonder how far he's got by now.
Spanish wine it shall be. And bottles. There's only three bottles. Then for the gold. Oh, Lord, if it be so that I may have this treasure for myself, I should count myself the happiest man alive under the throne of the sky. But first to the apothecaries. Good morrow, friend apothecary. How brightly shines the sun today. How green the grass.
Good morrow.
My home is sorely troubled with vermin, sir. Rats, large ones. I wish a kind of poison to rid myself of them.
You shall have something which if any living creature in this whole world ate but the amount of a single grain of wheat, he should die in less time than it would take you to walk 10 feet.
There, the first bottle is finished. The poison mixes well with the wine. Now for the second. Two good bottles of choice wine for my comrades, and one for me. I shall mark carefully. Now we shall see who profits.
Our brother is coming, Rudolph. Remember our plans. You are to engage him in a friendly game. He is hurrying fast and has the wine under his arm. Good speed, brother. You are back soon.
I hurried as fast as I could. Here are two bottles of wine for you. I am tired, I tell you, and I shall welcome a little rest.
Well, why don't you sit down on the north side of the yoke and drink your wine where it is shady?
Good idea. But drink your wine, too. What do you want, Rudolph? Oh, you want to play. Go away. I tell you I'm tired.
He's right, Rudolph.
A little later when I am rested.
A little later.
Yes, right now I wish for... Oh! What is it? You stabbed me.
Take another.
No, you cutthroats. You steal. You want my gold. You go.
Good work, Rudolph. He won't bother us anymore, will he? Now, let's celebrate with the wine he has brought for us. Open both the bottles. Open. Good. To the merry days ahead, Rudolph. We shall bury him later. And to our health. There's a funny taste of this bottle. Here, try mine while I try yours. Yours tastes the same way, just the same. It's become devilishly warm, Rudolph. This burning in my stomach. We're tying all that gold, Rudolph. We're dying. The wine.
They sought death, and they found death. So Geoffrey Chaucer concluded the Pardoner's Tale, an allegory of the wages of greed and violence, which apart from its value as a story of suspense and murder, reflects the truth that greed is indeed the root of all evil. By and large, Chaucer wrote of the men and women of his time, picturing them with such genius that they remain as real for us as they were when he set pen to paper. His sense of reality, though, was combined with a gift for fantasy. For example, the narrative of a third member of the company that journeyed down to Canterbury on that memorable April. It is a fable, and it is known as The Nun's Priest's Tale.
Adulatio, finem non consequitur. Flattery will get you nowhere you want to be.
This story is laid in a barnyard, a small and modest barnyard, ruled over by a rooster with a bright red comb and a loud, fine voice, whose name was Chanticleer. He was possessed of a wife named Dame Partlet, who was a comely, buxom hen.
Crocket, crocket.
Many neighbors had they in the barnyard. There was Mrs. Duck. Mrs. Goose. The Right Honorable Mr. Bull. Friend Dog. Friend Pig. Squire Hog. And a group of industrious bees. Now, this tale took place in the olden days, when those who were knowing knew that animals had the power of speech. And it began one gay and shining morn on the roost of a chicken house, shared by our hero Chanticleer and his devoted spouse.
Oh, no. Oh, please. Oh, no.
Chanticleer, what ails you? Wake up, dear man. Wake up.
Welcome. It was a dream.
Whatever on earth was it about?
Now, I was down in the barnyard, and suddenly I heard a sound behind me. A low, heavy, panting sound, fearful in the extreme. And I turned to see a beast of such a dreadful appearance.
Now then, in what way was he so dreadful?
He looked, how shall I say it, a bit like a hound, of a color between yellow and red. His tail and ears were both tipped with black, and I noted that he was equipped with a set of sharp little teeth before he made a terrifying lunge and seized my throat between his jaws. Oh, my dear, it was such a shattering experience.
Experience, indeed. It was no experience at all. It was a dream, nothing more and nothing less. Oh. Come now, be of good courage.
All right, my little clucking darling. I'll try to be a merrier companion. In fact, I'm beginning to feel better already. For when I look at your pretty little face, with your small yellow bill and your big red eyes, all my fears die away.
And with this, Chanticleer flew down from the rafter, threw back his chest, and commenced the day with... For in the light of the sun, with Partlet at his side, he was regal and no longer afraid. It was several hours to noon, and Chanticleer was busily picking for grain, as a good rooster should, his evil dream forgotten. Partlet had wandered away to pass the time of day with Mrs. Duck and her husband. And Chanticleer was quite alone on the edge of the barnyard when suddenly behind him he heard... And Chanticleer stood frozen to the spot, his heart pounding like a blacksmith's hammer. The sound came again. And the rooster turned, and there, leering at him, he saw a beast. A bit like a hound, of a color between yellow and red. His ears and tail both tipped with black. And as he stood transfixed, he heard the stranger's mouth, equipped with a set of small, sharp teeth, announce itself as...
Mr. Russell Fox.
And Chanticleer, quaking with terror, would have run for his life if the fox, in the oiliest tones imaginable, had not hastened to say...
I trust I didn't startle you, my friend. I offer my sincerest apologies for coming up behind you without warning, but the fact is I am extremely drawn to you. Fascinated by your talents, so to speak.
My talent?
I have come here, Mr. Chanticleer, for the sheer pleasure of listening to that melodious voice of yours.
My voice?
Yes. I wonder, sir, if you would sing for me.
Why, I guess I could.
What a treat. What an experience. Come, close your eyes. That's right. Stretch out your long, slender neck. Very good. Now fill the world with glorious melody.
But, I'll try. Of all the people I have known, this fox is quite the smartest, for he alone has recognized that I am quite an artist. What with the kind encouragement of this admiring friend, I ask someone to tell me now where my career shall end.
Right here.
The fox had made a sudden leap and, grabbing our startled singer by the throat, was racing off with him across the fields when Dame Partlet and the rest of the barnyard heard Chanticleer's cries for help. At once they were up and off to the rescue. The ducks came flapping in pursuit. The geese came flopping wildly. The cows and dogs and pigs and hogs raised Cain, to put it mildly. The bees from out their hives buzzed too. And the fox's victim, thinking fast, spoke up somewhat as follows.
My dear sir, though your pursuers are friends of mine, the language they're using and the things they're calling you are most objectionable, even to me. They mean well, no doubt, but how a gentleman of your distinction can tolerate such abuse is quite beyond my imagination. If I were you, I'd put them in their place. Yes, sir. Out of pride and a sense of my own personal value, I'd turn on them and give them a piece of my mind.
That's just what I'm going to do.
The fox had fallen for the rooster's trick, and when he opened his mouth to speak, Chanticleer released, took to his wings, and perched on the limb of a tree.
We are a pair of fools, you and I. You tricked me and caught me, and I tricked you and got away. But the game is over. Never again will anyone get me to sing with my eyes closed. For a rooster who closes his eyes when he should be watching deserves whatever befalls him.
And any of you good people who think this tale is a piece of foolishness will do well to remember that flattery will get you nowhere you want to be. Next week, Heritage dramatizes the fascinating story of a great American, Benjamin Franklin. Be sure to listen. Materials for these documentary programs are prepared with the guidance of Life magazine, based on Life's picture history of Western man, and produced in collaboration with leading scholars and educators. Heritage is produced and directed by Sherman H. Dreyer. Today's program, in association with ABC, featured Bryna Rayburn, Dorothy Francis, Leon Janney, Ivor Francis, Donald Buca, Arnold Robertson, and Donald Bain. Narrator for Heritage is Charles Irving. Original music by Al Datz and Ralph Norman. The orchestra was conducted by Mr. Norman. Today's script by Peter Berry. This is Ed Michael speaking.
This program was transcribed. This is ABC Radio Network. It's 10 o'clock at KECA AM and FM Los Angeles.